G'day everybody, my name is Glenn Hill.
And I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tenors podcast, and today we're doing another player overview on Mr. Grigor Dimitrov.
The man himself. No, I'm just kidding. But you're pretty high on Dimitrov.
I have been all year, and I was happy to say that, a bit of a rough patch over the clay court season, and then he finished really strongly. And I mean, obviously, year-end number three and won the World Tour Finals without dropping a match.
Yeah, and this is a guy that's had a long history of what I'll call
disappointing
being on
people.
The radar. Well, no, I don't think this. I mean, he hasn't disappointed me.
Well, but I mean, I think I think he's been a source of disappointment to a lot of tennis fans because this is a guy who was extremely promising as a junior. I mean, as a junior, he's a former world junior number one. He's one of only three players ever to win the Wimbledon junior title without losing a set. The other two people being Federer and Stefan Edberg. So that's pretty rarefied company right there.
Yeah, that puts you pretty high up there. And he won Wimbledon and the US Open when he was a junior, right?
Yeah.
He did, so both people those that things. Win the US Open have a tendency to do very, very well. And very few juniors win the Wimbledon and the U.S. Open.
Yes, absolutely. And not just that, for a good reason, he's also, early on in his career, came up with the moniker, or he didn't come up with it, but the moniker slash nickname of Baby Fed, as in Baby Federer, stuck to him because he's an extremely athletic player, and there's, especially when we talk about the forehand and to a slightly lesser degree the backhand, there's a lot of visual aesthetic similarities between his and Roger Federer's game. Like, his forehand is a very similar shot from a visual perspective.
Yeah, and I mean, the name stuck, I think, for a lot of reasons. It seemed like everyone could find their own reason to justify that name. Some people even thought that he looked like a younger Federer.
As he gets older,
he looks, different. But, I mean, this was, remember, when he was, 17, 18,
sure.
19 years old. He was working with the same coach that Federer had worked with when he was that age.
Right.
I mean, it was just reason after reason. So, we're still talking about him being Baby Fed from back in the day, years on. I think at this point, he probably hates that title because when you're number three in the world, you probably want your own nickname that isn't related to someone else.
Right. Well, I don't think people really call him Baby Fed anymore, but the point being that the expectations for him were extremely high, and yet by and large, here we are. He's, 26 years old now, still hasn't won a slam. And
still hasn't won a final.
Right. And he's come close, but yeah. So there's a degree to where I think everyone was expecting him to lead the charge of this next generation that was supposed to take over from, Federer and Nadal and Djokovic and Murray. And yet he just, along with an entire generation that hasn't quite managed to break through, really break through, I think he's in a lot of ways almost personified that generation of players who look great and we just keep waiting for something to happen and it doesn't quite happen. But I've been really big on him all year because going back to Brisbane, when he won Brisbane, I was watching him play there and it was the first time that, he'd really showing me the caliber of play that made me feel like he could beat top players consistently. But let's talk a little bit about the bigger picture of what sort of style of player Grigor is for those listening
this,
at home.
This is a guy who's really interesting, and if you haven't followed him closely, I mean, he's worth watching. Like, he's a lot of fun. I mean, when you watch him play, how do you think about him from the big picture? Like, what kind of style player is he?
To me, he's an aggressive baseline player who has an all-court game. So this is a guy who's going to really hit the ball pretty hard, play very aggressively. He looks to move forward. He's very happy and comfortable moving forward, wants to be doing so, but definitely does that behind his ground strokes. He views his forehand as his biggest weapon. He's looking to hit forehands, moves the ball around the court off the backhand side, mixes up the slice and the topspin, and he's really looking to create with the forehand and look for his chance to get forward.
I see this guy, I think of him in very simple terms, right? And you might disagree with this and think that I'm oversimplifying it. But I think of Grigor as an all-court player that tries to beat you with pace straight through the court. So I feel like he loves his pace and he's trying to beat you with straight lines. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know that we've talked about this some, and you know, it's tough for me because I think of him still as the player that I've seen him for the last 6 years.
Right.
And some of that is changing now because I recognize that, you know, he's transitioning his game, it appears, right? Like he hasn't played that way all year this year. Like right. I'm not totally blind, but I still think of him as this player that I've seen him for, you know, the bulk of his career up to now. Now he wouldn't have finished number three in the world if he wasn't doing a better job of doing things other than beating people with pace straight through the court.
Yeah, I think that's when you describe him that way. To me, you're describing the Grigor Dimitrov of, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and I don't think he's that guy anymore. I think certainly he still has access to pace. He still uses pace, but I think there is a lot more sophistication to the way that he's playing now. And you know, I mean, yeah, he's going to bring some heat off the baseline. There's no doubt about that. But it's one piece of the puzzle for him, whereas once upon a time that was the puzzle. So let's talk a little bit about Grigor's assets, you know, the strengths and weapons that he brings to the table.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, I want to start on this one because it's pretty simple for me. I see his assets as being his movement and his hustle, and I'm not saying that his movement comes from his hustle. I think he's actually like he hustles more than a lot of guys that maybe are, I mean, there's not a lot of guys that are as fast as him.
Sure.
But go back, like, if we look at tennis over, say, a period of 10 or 20 years, a lot of guys that have the kind of athleticism that Grigor has don't necessarily have the hustle. Like, Gael Monfils comes to mind. Gael Monfils does not hustle the way that Dimitrov does, to me, over the course of his career.
So how are we defining hustle here? So, you know, when you first started talking about that, to me, I'm thinking like a willingness to not give up on the ball and
yeah,
to really and go that, for everything.
Yeah, and that he's trying to go fast. I don't want to say all the time, but essentially
right.
all the time.
Hustling, like, but he's hustling on everything. Whereas, because, you know, when you talk about Gale, like, to me, Gale hustles for when he
defense.
Needs to. Yeah.
He hustles for defense.
He hustles for defense. But
Grigor,
but you're saying Grigor's hustling
for
offense,
defense,
right.
And he's, for offense.
Yeah, he's always yeah. trying to get that extra inch or get that little bit better position. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's just there's a way in which he really does have a never quit attitude, and you really can't sleep on him, and I count that as an asset. Because he's definitely a guy, and he's proved it, especially this year and over the last 18 months, that you know you can get ahead on him, but it doesn't mean that you're going to close it out. So I mean,
sure.
if guys drop the level a little bit, like he's really hustling, like he's fighting his way back in, and so I
yeah.
really count that as an asset for him.
Right.
And then his movement is separate for that. I think he's one of the best movers on the tour. I mean, he might not be as rawly athletic as Monfils. That I pointed out before.
But it's
that's
close.
Just,
like, it's actually a discussion.
It's close. And that tells you something about Monfils more than it tells you anything about Grigor, because I think Grigor's head and tails more athletic than almost every guy on the tour. And then the other thing, I actually list his asset not as a stroke, but as his velocity, because he can hit a forehand or a backhand or a serve or even a volley really, really stinking hard. And to me, I think that's a part of how he sees the game. And so that's a part of, I mean, that's what I list as his asset, is that he can hit the ball hard, like,
right.
and from both sides and from most places in the court. So I've got velocity, movement, and hustle. I mean,
right.
Those are the way I break down his assets.
See, so I look at that a little bit more differently. So I'm with you on the movement. And, I mean, I think he's one of the most athletic guys on the tour. And importantly to me, I think he's able to be athletic in, like, physical positions in terms of, like, his body almost like near split positions and just awkward situations on the court, he's still able to be strong and explosive in a way that almost nobody else on the tour is. I mean, there are a couple other guys I think that can do this to a similar degree, but you know, he can run in for a wide forehand and skid out there and be almost in the splits and still be strong and powerful there and explosive. You know, I think his forehand is worth listing as an explicit asset. He's got one of the better forehands on the tour. Certainly, it's to me in the top five or six forehands out there. He has variety on that thing. He can hit it hard. He can hit it heavy. He defends the forehand corner. I know you're going to disagree with me on this one, but he defends the forehand corner to me better than anybody else right now. In terms of when you combine his athleticism and that stroke and what he does with that stroke when he gets out there on the run. You know, so that's a definite asset. I think his backhand, both topspin and slice, are assets to me. His slice backhand is very good. He's using it intelligently these days, and he has one of the best one-handed backhands on the tour. And I think also, you know, his volleys are good enough that they're an asset to me. Especially when you put it together with when he chooses, like his net game, I guess, is, you know, when he's choosing to move forward and then, you know, when he does so, his volleys, he's putting himself in situations where his volleys are getting the job done. You know, obviously he's no Stefan Edberg, but
no.
he's also no Novak Djokovic. I mean, he's a much more competent. No,
he's not a liability when it comes into the net, like, oh man, now he's screwed.
Right. You know, so this brings me to an interesting thing, because I think now we're about to talk about something that to me falls into both the asset and the liability column, which is his first serve. Because this is something that's very up and down still. It's vastly improved. His toss, he has some issues with at times. He'll kind of lose his toss for stretches of matches. But when that's not happening, and that only happens in some matches for periods, it's not like an everyday kind of thing. But aside from when he has those weird toss moments, his first serve is formidable. I mean, he has significant velocity on that thing, consistently in the 130s. It's a real weapon when he's not tossing wonky. Of course, when he is tossing wonky, like, his percentages go way down, he loses velocity, and that's a problem.
Right. All right, so I think we look at his serve a little bit differently, but let's try and be as clear as we can for both of our own sakes here. What does he do really well on the serve? Like, what outcome is really good about his serve?
When things are going right for him, when he's having a good serving day, his location is pretty good. It's not great, but it's better than most. His location is good. He's able to bring significant velocity. He started to open the court up better, especially on the deuce court. Like, he's serving a little smarter out there. He's getting a little more spin and getting that ball a little wider and really taking it off the court, like genuinely off the court. Whereas, you know, you've got guys that are taller than him, like Kevin Anderson, for example, whose wide serve is really just to the corner and it's just almost going straight through. Grigor's really starting to pull it up and stretch it out there. And when, you know, when you combine that with his ability to hit a T serve at 135, then that's a pretty good combination. You know, and his first serve percentage is up significantly. You know, about 3 years ago, he started to really bring his first serve percentage up, and now he's up in the 60s consistently, which is very good. And, you know, so if he's making a lot of first serves and they're high velocity and he's able to hit spots pretty well, then he's hitting a lot of serves and aren't coming back. And then he's getting a lot of forehands off that first ball.
So this is what I heard. He can serve really hard. And if he's making his serves and hitting his spots, then it's really tough combinations.
Well, okay. So when you say it like that, it sounds to me like you think... See, that to me sounds almost a little bit nebulous. Like, oh yeah, he serves really hard. And when he hits his spots and when he makes his serves, what I'm saying is, he has a high first serve percentage for somebody his height. It's in the 60s.
Yeah. Look, he has a very good serve. Like, I'm not trying to take that away.
Right. Well, I'm saying let me be very, very clear about this. He has very high velocity. He has good location, and he makes a lot of first serves most matches. He occasionally has matches where things don't go right.
I think you just nailed it. I think those are the things that he really does well. So if the deal is, if you can get to those things, then his serve becomes a liability. If you can't get him to miss more first serves, or if you then, like, you're just going to have a hard day, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, well, see, but that's the thing is, I don't think it's if you can't get him to miss more first serves. I think he goes out and has days where his toss goes off, and then he just misses a lot of first serves, and maybe
that's perfectly fair. You know me as a coach. You know that I'm always thinking from the perspective as, you know, it's your job to influence the server on the other side. Right. Now, if Grigor doesn't let you, then, you know, he's got a good chance of staying at a very high ranking for a very long time.
Right.
I mean, we know that, like, guys like Federer doesn't really let you influence his serve very much. I mean, sure. You talk about influencing Federer's serve and you're going after like 2 points in a tiebreaker.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to like drop his service percentage by 10 points. I mean, right. That's going to be up to him.
I'm with you. So I think we can both agree without any argument that his second serve is a liability.
Yes. And that's, to me, that bleeds a little bit to the first serve. For the really good servers, like, we certainly don't say that Pete's second server is a liability. We don't say that Fed's second server is a liability. For the guys that really have what I think of as excellent mastery of their serve, they don't have a liability like that.
Right.
So
when I want to cut in there because I really like the way that you just phrased that. The mastery of the serve. And I don't think Grigor has mastery of the serve. He has a good serve overall, but he doesn't have mastery of it. There's aspects of it where he's still searching for that. I mean, we're seeing the improvements. He's obviously doing the work. But yeah, like, his second serve to me is he's not, you know, it's got good velocity and it's a good heavy serve, but he doesn't hit spots on his second serve the way that, like, Federer does.
No, and it's way, way, way less effective than other people. Like, I mean, it's just like, it's not as good as it should be given what he's doing with his first serve.
Right.
But that's what stands out to me, is that his first serve really is that he's got tremendous velocity. I mean, this is a guy who's strong and athletic. And like you pointed out earlier, he has strength and athleticism in bad positions. And sometimes he can even use that, like, say with a wonky toss on a serve. Right. He can still crack down an ace that
where some people might hurt their shoulder.
Exactly. Or wouldn't even, you know.
Right. They'd have to choose between dropping 20 miles an hour or hurting their shoulder. And he's just like, stuff it.
And Grigor, he never, ever, ever has to lose velocity on a serve. So, like, this is a guy who can hit hard second serves. But again, like you said, like, he's not hitting his spots well enough. He's not using it well enough. His spins aren't good enough.
You know, when you talk about the mastery, that's the other thing to me is, he doesn't vary the spin on that second serve to where, you know, like, he'll hit a off a kick or toss, kind of go for that spot that would normally kick away from the player, but instead he hits a little slice on it and curves it into the body and jams them. Like, there's just not that little variation. I don't think he's not crafting that second serve. Like, he's not really looking for those little margins and finding a little extra advantage.
I have to cut you off there because you just slid in that idea, like, oh, he's not doing this second serve. Where the idea that you just slid in is something that I don't know that Grigor's ever thought of in his entire life.
Sure.
Okay.
And
now, granted, like, he's out there playing Wimbledon, you know, and playing at a level that we're not playing at. And we have the time to think about those kinds of things.
Well, that's what we do for a living, you know, and that's
right.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, the way that you put it in, like, it's not like such an easy thing to do.
No, I mean, on second serves, there's a handful of players on the tour who I think are serving and thinking at that level on the second serve.
And most of those guys probably don't have the velocity that Grigor does to fall back on.
No, I mean, like Fed will fiddle around with the second serve like that, but no. You know, the other big thing that I think we have to talk about while we're on the liabilities column is the return of serve, because to me that's the single biggest thing holding him back right now. And I've seen signs that he's starting to make progress here, but he slices incredibly too many backhand returns. Yeah. That was a very weird sentence. Actually, I said that very oddly, but significantly but you're right. Too many backhand returns are slice returns for Griggle.
He has matches where he gets into a rut and he'll slice every backhand.
Yeah, like 90-something% of his backhand returns, and even on the second serve return. And that's an issue, right?
To be even more specific, his slice backhand return isn't good enough. Like, Roger Federer can play whole matches where he can hit that shot, and he's breaking you all the time.
Most people. There's a handful that he can't get away with that. But yeah, absolutely. But even then, like, you talk about that, and you're not wrong. But one of the things that's been so huge for Roger this year is stepping up, taking the backhand return early, and driving against most people, almost all of them. Whereas Griggle has gone in the opposite way. And so the problem to me is he's giving up the initiative. For a guy who's so athletic and he has all these weapons, he's handing away the initiative on the return of serve too often. And I think that he would be very well served to step in, you know, 4 or 5 feet inside the baseline the way that, like, Roger is, for example, hit over every backhand return and be willing to make more mistakes in the process, but to start more of the ones that he does make ahead, because he's got a good hold game. He doesn't need to break every return game. What he needs to do is take his chances and get the 1 to 2 breaks a set that'll get the job done.
You know what? I think that's exactly right. And I would go so far as to say I don't even care if he returns in the style of Federer, more attacking, or even in the style of Stan Wawrinka, where he backs way the heck up and just clubs the ball. Like, right. I don't care. To me, it seems like he has a psychological weakness when it comes to the return of serve. And when you watch him play lower ranked players, I'm talking guys outside of the top 40 or 50, okay? Guys who are good players, but who are not top 50 players. The thing that stands out to me is he gives up the initiative and lets guys that are ranked way lower than him and are half as athletic as him take the initiative on their own service games in a way that, like, when Federer slicing, he just that absolutely doesn't happen.
Right. When Federer's hitting that slice, he's neutralizing the serve and putting people in awkward positions a lot of the time. Whereas when Grigor's doing it a lot of times, he's hitting slice backhands to the center of the court that aren't.
It's just letting guys hit.
They're neither too short nor too deep. And so he's giving people really a good hittable ball. Yeah, I'm completely with you on that front.
So that to me is something that I think is probably going to be, like, his coach is going to have an influence on that, or somebody in his team is really going to have to push that along. I don't think Grigor is going to – well, I don't think Grigor is just going to, like, make that decision on his own. I mean, Fed is a perfect example here. From what we can tell from the reports going all the way back to Paul Anacone when he was coaching Fed, like, 10 years ago, he's had 10 years of coaches yelling at him to hit more aggressive backhand returns. Even his father said he was doing it in the juniors when the kid was 16 years old.
Right.
So, I mean, Federer took a long time to get that through. Now he's doing it and he's winning slams again. That's awesome.
And there's definitely, I think, a relationship there. But this is the thing, though, to me, why I would think that Grigor shouldn't take anywhere near as long is because for a guy who has obviously modeled large parts of his game on Federer, I think that Federer is showing him the way, and he'd be a fool not to be paying attention.
Right. Hopefully he will look at Fed again and say, you know what, maybe he was tired of the baby Fed comparisons and wanted to kind of do his own thing for a while.
Well, but his own thing is what Federer used to do. You know, his own, like, if that's his own thing, I mean, that's Federer up until 2017, January. So, yeah, I would hope that wasn't his solution of finding his own identity, but is there anything else that you would list in his liabilities?
I have his decision making in there. I still think that he's got enough psychological weakness. Let me say this the right way, actually. I think what it is that he has enough lack of mastery that it really creates psychological weakness. That he has awareness of his own weaknesses, and I think it influences his decision making. So I think between the issues that I see on serve and on return, those are big places in your game to second guess yourself.
Mm.
And so I think that bleeds over into other parts of his game where, like, I don't see problems with his forehand technically. I mean, his forehand's really sticking good.
Like, yeah, to me, that's a shot that he does have mastery over.
Yeah, physically he does, for sure. but I see some decision making issues in his game. And I mean, to be fair, he's done tremendously better. I mean, not a little bit better, but tremendously better in 2017 with decision making. Like we talk about his slice return as a liability, but it's something that has absolutely improved in actual point play and how he uses that to move the ball around the court.
Right.
But that's it. I mean, for me, it's his second serve. It's his second serve specifically on the serve. That first serve, like we talked about, can go both ways. Then the returner serve is a big liability, and his decisions are still, I think you can still get to them. I think you cover them more, but especially the better players, I think you can really get, you can influence him to make bad decisions.
See, a year ago I would have agreed with you. Now I don't. I don't think that's a liability for him anymore. I think that he has enough structure, like enough intelligent structure in his game now that on clay, I think he still makes poor decisions. He hasn't made the adjustment on and figured out how to play clay court properly. And that shows in his results. I mean, he had a 4-5 or a 5-4 record on the clay this year. Pretty abysmal. And I think that's a decision thing. Like that's a lack of understanding of how to take his game and put it on the clay properly. But I mean, I think he has enough structure in place now that his decisions are good. This is the thing to me is when he's going out in the court now, most of his decisions are already made, which is, I think wasn't true 2 years ago. And mm-hmm. the decisions that have already been pre-made are good ones. Like if you give him a backhand now, he already knows what he's going to do with that. Whereas I think 2 years ago, he was trying to figure that out in the rally. And now he has good patterns, successful patterns that he's falling back on. So that's not something that I really consider to be, it's not in the asset column yet, but it's also to me, not in the liabilities column. And I could see why you think that it is. And that's, you know, it's just a minor point of contention. So if we talk about like the key patterns and strategies that Dimitrov employs, you know, to me, it all starts with his serve plus one. I mean, this is a guy who is definitely looking to jump on the point early on his own serve.
This is definitely a serve plus one guy. His game to me is all about a serve plus one because his return's not good. So really you can say like his game is all about hold and serve. I mean, you can say that to some degree about everybody, but for him, it's particularly true. Like he's not, especially against top 10 players, this is not a guy who you expect to break serve very often.
No, he's not. I mean, he's out there breaking, I think in like the 20 something percent range, like high 20s. The thing is, his break rate isn't terrible, but yeah, I mean, this is all about like on his serve, he's definitely looking to serve and get a forehand for the first ball. And when he gets that forehand, he's looking to do something very productive and aggressive with it. And that's, I think the key patterns of strategy that he builds his game around. Like that's the core idea on his serve that he wants. Once he gets in an actual rally, what he's trying to do, generally speaking, is create forehand opportunities. So he wants to end up where he's posting up in the backhand corner and controlling play with his forehand. Like that's where he wants to be. If he can't finish the point in the first 2-3 shots and he isn't a rally, like he's working to get to that position where he's in the backhand corner hitting forehands. He'll use his slice backhand to help create that. And that's, you know, there's been a couple articles, like actual physical articles up on the website about his use of the slice backhand this year. There's one, I think, posted way back in January. From his play in Brisbane, and then we did another one from the World Tour Finals, specifically with his match against Goffin. He's using that slice to move play around and get forehands or draw errors out of opponents. And that's, to me, his fallback. On the return games, for example, that's really what he's looking to do is get in the rally and then work play around until he can get into that backhand corner hitting forehands. But, you know, again, he's chipping too many of his returns like we talked about.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the game goes all the way. It goes all back to the serve plus one. You know, his movement is tremendous. So in a way, he's a very good defender. Like you can't just like out hit him.
No.
You have to open up the court and you have to be able to finish against him, especially more now. And that's the thing that I think has really changed is instead of it seems like what he used to do when he started to get into trouble from the baseline is he would slice balls kind of to the wrong places, or let's just say just up the middle. And, you know, if you slice a medium quality ball up the middle and it's not deep enough, then the truth is that guys that are top 200 have a big enough forehand that they can outhit you. They can finish the point just right there. And that part of his game is pretty much gone now.
Right.
So, you know, that has, I mean, to me, that's explains that, I mean, the vast majority of his success is just taking that part of his game out. But he's, you know, he's really using the slice to move the ball around more. I don't think he's really making opponents uncomfortable in the way that, say, Federer does, but his slice backhand is very good. I almost have it as an asset in terms of just his ability to hit really good quality balls.
Oh, I think, look, if you go back and look, so an example would be the match that he played against Raonic in Brisbane in January. I mean, Raonic has a big game, and yeah. Dimitrov was consistently putting slice backhands within a foot of the baseline, like good penetrating slice backhands off of like Raonic's forehands, when Raonic is unloading on a forehand and Dimitrov's like pushing him back. He's putting him on defense with a slice backhand off of a Raonic forehand. I mean, I think his slice backhand is absolutely an asset at this point. Yeah, so he's able to stay in points for a very long time using those shots, and he's so athletic that he can stay in points long enough that he gets the opportunity to transition. And I think that's part of why he is so defensive on the return, because I think he feels like if he makes his return, he'll stay in the point long enough till he gets his chance.
Yeah, and I mean, that seems to be the way he feels, is just hang around until I can just hit a huge ball and hurt you, or come forward, or until, you know, sometimes you're going to make a mistake. But, you know, that's what his tremendous movement and athleticism affords him, is genuine confidence that if he can just hang around, he can win.
Right.
And, but that, to me, the flip side of that is he had in the past, he hadn't structured his game enough to just take control of the point as soon as he can and serve plus one his way into at least holding serve 18 times in a three set match. So now, I mean, he's using that slice to get his inside out forehands, like you said, and the way you said it afterwards, that he's able to stay around in points is really big, and he's able to stay patient in points.
Yes,
I think the changes to his game over the last, what I look at is really 18 months. I think what you probably look at is even longer than that.
No, I think 18 months is about right. You know, I think that's about right, because it was really after the clay court season back in 2016 was when he really started this turnaround, and it's been a very upwards trajectory for him since then. And to me, like January this year was when things really started to click. Like he came out and really believed, I think.
You know what I'm curious about when it comes to this development is whether this is something that he practiced for like a year or two going up to that, and it took that long for him to do it in matches, or whether it's something that they just tried, and in the course of a few weeks he was using it in matches, and then for the last 18 months we've actually seen the actual development of it in matches.
No, I mean, I think obviously I think that, I mean, to me, I've seen since he started working with Valverde, like he has had a gradual but consistent evolution in his like sophistication. The patterns have started to come, like he's been implementing them more and more and more, you know, and his I guess comfort level with implementing them has just increased. Like I said, the only real hole there is just the clay court play. But so if we take all that, let's get to our projection here. So what is your projection looking for Dimitrov for this year, and then, you know, for the next 5 years?
Well, which one of those should I start with? What do you think?
Whichever one you're comfortable. Which one do you want to start with?
I suppose long term is where I like to start. I have him being a top 10 guy for the next 3 to 5 years. And in my mind, he's unlikely to stay into the top five. I think that there's an assault that's coming on him in the return of the injured big four players. And that, you know, Djokovic coming back, I think there's a very good chance that he's going to have an assault on that top five. I think Wawrinka, there's a very good chance that he'll have an assault on that top five. And I think Murray, there's a very good chance. Now, side note, I think there's a small chance that all three of those guys are going to end up back at the top. But between that and then the young guys that are coming up, with Zverev being right there on his heels, Team being sort of opposite from him, so maybe not taking away a ton of points because Team, I think, is making most of his points on the clay. But I just have a hard time seeing him staying there. I think that Grigor's level of play is going to stay pretty consistent, but I don't think that his level of play is good enough to be number three in the world at the end of 2018.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I'm with you on the... I mean, I'm just going to say flat out, I think he's going to be a top 10 player for the next 5 years. Barring something horrible happening in terms of injury, to me, that's just a done deal at this point. He could just basically maintain the current level of play that he has and he'll be a top 10 player for the next 5 years. I think he's going to continue to improve some. The big question to me is if he wants to become an actual staple in the top five, he has to figure the clay out. And there's just no two ways around that. Because his hard court results this year have been good enough. That's the hard court results of a top five player. Right. But his clay court results are not. And the difference is this. When you look at the guys that are on their way back from injury, you know, you've got Stan at number nine. Stan has won a slam on hard courts and he's won a slam on clay. Stan knows how to win on both those surfaces. And yeah, Stan is also pretty patchy, but he will have big results on both surfaces if he's healthy. He's just going to. And tennis rewards big results. You know, it doesn't matter if you make the second or third round week in, week out, week in, week out. If you win a tournament, lose first round, win a tournament, lose first round, you come out way ahead. And so he has to be able to get some big results on the clay. And if he can't do that, then he's not going to be a top five guy. But to me, I see him finishing this upcoming year about five or six. I think he might squeeze in top five again this year. I think he's going to be either five or six. And then, you know, there's a lot of question around these guys who are coming back from the injury. I mean, you know, there's Murray's return date. Yeah. It's very much in doubt now. I'm not 100% sure what Novak's going to do. You know, there's a question for Stan as well. I mean, I Stan was thinking about retiring. Like, that was an actual discussion he had. So, the problem to me is just that the top 10, top 15, heck, let's just say it, the top 20 right now is so deep. It's so deep. I think Grigor's got more than most of the guys in the top 20, and I think he's going to be a top 10 guy. Again, five or six this coming year, and then if he figures out how to bring his patterns to the clay, then I think he can be a top five guy. Okay. Will he ever win a slam?
In my mind, he's not there to win a slam yet. I think, in a weird way, if he's going to win a slam, it needs to be in the next 20 months. He's going to have some small windows to win slams. The only thing that really makes me hesitate about saying that is... Well, let me say this. He's not going to win the French. We'll just make first things easy.
Yeah.
But then the thing that makes me say that is that there's a real shot for Grigor to, similar to the way he can hang around in points and then kind of hurt you at the end, I think he could hang around for a few years. And that lost generation that we've referred to in the past, with guys like him and Goffin that are very good players, if they can outlast Federer and Novak and Nadal, and Stan is right in that category as well, then, you know, it's possible that he could have his nose in front of the Zverevs and the teams and the young guys that are coming up. If nothing else, just based on experience and confidence and you know, being on the tour for 7-8 years more than those guys.
Right.
But somehow that seems unlikely. It seems to me that the level of play is really rising. and that there's not going to be a gap where he's just able to sneak out, you know, a year or two where he's like the number one or number two player in the world. So
see, I don't think he needs to sneak it out though. I mean, the thing is, yeah, the level of play is rising and he's number three in the world right now.
Yeah. I think other people's level is rising more than his. I mean, I think that it seems like the big difference in our outlooks for him is I think I rate his serve lower than yours. And I think I rate the psychological issues as being worse than you see them. So
yeah, I think we definitely disagree on that because I don't see those issues anymore. This is not a guy to me who's doubts. This is not a guy to me who's confused. I mean, this is the thing to me. You know, a big part of the reason why I've stayed big on Grigor this whole year, even when he started to lose a lot of early clay court matches, I stayed big on him, and people thought I was crazy. I still stayed big on him. Think about the Australian Open and the fact that he was a couple points away from beating a Nadal who was playing great tennis. Not like catching Nadal on an off day. Like, he stood toe-to-toe with Nadal in the semifinal of a slam and didn't blink. He lost, but he didn't blink. And I'll never forget this because he lost that match. And, you know, they're doing all the little post-match camera work and they pan to the hallway off the court, you know, where the tunnel where the players walk through. And they catch Grigor walking through that tunnel. And a lot of guys in that situation would have been crushed. They would look like, for a lot of people, you would think, oh, that was his one shot. And
right.
He's walking down that hallway and his shoulders were back. His head was high. There was swagger in his walk. And he like fist bumped one of the guys that was standing in the hallway, not like his coach, like some random dude who's standing around, gives him a fist bump and makes his way into the locker room. And it was just like, yeah, this was not a guy who looked like, oh God, I lost my one shot. It was like, yep, I deserve to be here and I'm going to win it next time. Like, that was the attitude that he had. And I think he's going to win at least one slam before he's done. I kind of have him in the 1-3 slam range. Some of that's going to depend a little bit on luck because, I mean, you know, if you're not a Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal, for most people, like, there's always a little bit of luck in winning a slam. And I think Roger's gotten lucky 19 times. So he'll win one. I think he's too good not to win one. And and more importantly to me now, he's too good and playing with enough structure that for him to go out and have a good 2 weeks, or really, more importantly, a great 1 week, isn't out of the question. So I think he's going to win one. It's either going to be grass or hard court. I'm with you. I don't think he'll ever win the French. But I think he's going to win between 1 and 3. You know, will it be next year? Who knows? Will it be the year after that? Who knows? But I think that's how his career is going to end up playing out. This is not going to be the only year that he finishes year in number in the top five. And that's just where I see things going for him.
To me, he's got two good shots. Like, his two best shots of winning slams are the one where he gets a little bit lucky at, which would be at the U.S. Open at the end of the year, if there's a bunch of injuries again and he can get the right matchups. Not necessarily an easy draw, but if he gets the right matchups for him, then I can see him just serving his way to the final. And I think if he gets the right matchup in that final, then he's got a real shot there. The thing that I think is maybe more likely in a sense, because it doesn't rely on luck, is if he really goes a little bit crazy in terms of effort and does a huge training block, I could see him coming out of the off season and winning Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I think Australia's his best chance, honestly. I mean, I think his athleticism, his fitness, the conditions there, I think that's his best chance.
That's the one where I think he could just show up and what I would say sort of legitimately, I mean, everyone who wins the slam is legitimately, but that's the one where I think he could really earn it, where he could look back and say, like, look, I was the best player in the world. I won the biggest tournament that everyone wanted to win. Everyone was there.
Right. And it wouldn't be like, you know, so I mean, when I think of like Marin Cilic's slam, for example,
I think Cilic did that at the US Open. I mean, he played out of his
No, but see, I think mind. there was a lot of fortune.
There was. Well, like you said, you know, guys have to get a little bit lucky to win those slams, except for, you know, Roger and Rafa in Paris. And that's where I mean, look, I think we're both agreed. I think Australia is his best chance. I mean, I think that plays to his strengths. And I think that it's big for him that he could come out of a huge training block I just think that he's going to need to change. He's going to need to continue to change things in his game.
Right.
I think
but that's what we saw last year. Was he came out of the training block and came into Brisbane, and he was a higher caliber player. Like, he had leveled up, so to speak, and you know, that he carried that throughout the year on the hard courts. So, you know, I guess we'll see, but we'd love to hear your feedback on this. Maybe you think that we're both crazy or right, or there's something that we should have talked about that we didn't, or there's some better way that we could format these player overviews. Or maybe this is something else you'd like to hear us talk about that's entirely different. Regardless, please do reach out to us. You can get Jacob at jacob@tacticaltennis.com.
You can get Glenn at glenn@tacticaltennis.com, and you can find us on Twitter at Tactical Tennis, or
I'm at Glenn S. Hill.
I should really memorize that. And you can find us on Instagram at Tactical Tennis as well.
And on that note, hope everybody had a great holiday season, and we'll look forward to talking more tennis in the new year.